This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies. Terry Gross is out sick today, so we're listening back to some of our favorite recent interviews. Imagine how surprised Andy Warhol must have been when his brother, sister-in-law, and their seven kids paid one of their surprise visits to his Manhattan home and moved in for a few days. Our guest, James Warhola, was one of those seven kids. He loved those visits to Uncle Andy's house, and now he's written and illustrated a book called Uncle Andy's, A Fabulous Visit with Andy Warhol. It's in the form of a children's book, but it's probably even more interesting to adults. Warhola is a children's book illustrator who's also done the cover art for many paperbacks and has drawn for Mad Magazine. James Warhola's father, Paul, was Andy Warhol's oldest brother. The new book is set in 1962, the year that Andy Warhol made his first soup cans. James was about seven. Terry spoke with James Warhola last spring. He said his uncle's house was like a giant amusement park filled with art and found objects like carousel horses.
When we would first come into the house, we'd go up a few steps and there was this giant crumpled piece of metal, and it was a John Chamberlain sculpture of a wrecked car. And it was kind of stuck in the hallway, and you'd always have to make a right into a smaller room, which was his studio. And that was always a centerpiece we'd kind of look at, and he was always so proud of that piece. He'd always say it was by a famous artist, and we'd kind of look at it and seem to like question it, you know, what was it? And he'd say it was a part of a car, and of course we always saw a lot of that back home at my dad's junkyard. But throughout the house, he would have he had a lot of early, I guess you'd call them advertising objects, such as large Coke bottles and Pepsi Cola signs, and they would be intermixed throughout the house. And I think he thought all that was art in some way, and he started collecting that all through the 50s.
Now, you said that that your Uncle Andy's house and some of the art in it reminded you of your father's junkyard. Your father ran a junkyard. And it's just such an interesting comparison between the kind of pop art and found art that Andy Warhol was interested in and the kind of junk that your father collected and sold. You want to make that comparison a little more for us?
Oh, yeah. For one thing, it's hard to believe that my dad, who is his older brother, came from the same family. And we lived a life in Pittsburgh in the countryside of western Pennsylvania, not far out of Pittsburgh, and my dad ran a junk business, and there were seven in our family, and the boys were expected to kind of help out in the junkyard, and we knew the junk business pretty well. Every once in a while, my father would announce these visits that it was time to go visit Uncle Andy and Bubba in the big city, and Bubba being my grandmother. And he'd always take things from the junkyard when we'd go up to these on these trips. He'd take things that he thought that my uncle would appreciate. Because my dad, he was almost a frustrated artist in his own right, and he had a good eye for things. And in fact, early on, he was always bringing objects home for me to kind of make art out of. And I was a bit of more of a traditionalist in certain ways, and I couldn't see it the same way as my father. But anyway, my dad, he'd bring this stuff home from the junkyard, and he would kind of do different types of sculpture. And when he had the time, he would fool around. But in general, he had to just make a living and support our family.
So what kind of objects would your father take from his junkyard to bring as gifts for Andy?
Oh, well, if it wasn't the crumpled up metal, the one object I remember and I show in the book was this giant magnet that had this mass of bolts and screws attached to it. And it was kind of like you could sculpt the mass of bolts into different shapes. And he brought that up, and my uncle was quite impressed and put that near the doorway. And there was many other odds and ends, even like old arcade, like vending machines and things that he thought that Andy would appreciate. And my uncle, he was always impressed. I mean, he saw something interesting in everything. So it wasn't too hard to make him happy with some object that we would bring up.
What great eyes to be able to see out of. Do you know what I mean? To like see things through your uncle's eyes, who found so many discardable objects really fascinating and beautiful and important.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of wondered how, you know, he got that. I always attribute it to my grandmother, who he lived with for some 20 years. She had an interesting kind of artistic sense. And, of course, she was quite an important foundation for him living there in New York with him.
Yeah, and you know what? It's so hard to think of Andy Warhol living with his mom. You know, you think of Andy Warhol as like this kind of detached, cool, you know, hip artist surrounded by, you know, gender-bending artists who are high on drugs and creating this really, you know, nearly perverse scene. You don't think of him as living with his mom.
I know. Quite. That's been the usual perception. Most people are quite surprised that he had his mother there, and she took care of him. And I think he was a lot of his success he owes to his mother. And of course, having two brothers with each of them having a lot of kids was another aspect that people didn't realize. And it's quite an interesting contrast that in a lot of quite a surprise to a lot of people.
How long did he live with his mother?
It was probably from the early 50s to 1970, so it was almost 20 years.
So even after he was famous, he was living with her.
Oh yeah. He didn't have too many people come to his house. So that, I think that's you know, the reason maybe some people didn't realize.
So the scene was at the factory, but that was separate from his house.
Yeah, definitely. The factory scene was, it came about, I think, his first studio was an old firehouse, and that was in 1963. And then a year or two later, he got a place in Midtown, and that, I think, that's when the word the factory got coined. And that's where all those stories come of the wild going-ons. And most of the time up on 89th and Lex, he was always hard at work. There wasn't really, if anything, they protected us from the city itself. We were kind of isolated there.
James Warhola speaking to Terry Gross. He'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. Our guest is James Warhola, author of the book Uncle Andy's, A Fabulous Visit with Andy Warhol. He spoke to Terry Gross last spring.
Now, your father ran a junkyard. The junkyard was about a mile away on a dirt road from your actual home, but judging from the illustrations in the book, the lawn of your home was filled with junk.
Oh, yes.
Describe what your lawn typically looked like.
Well, it always had a few junk cars. I think when my dad found it convenient, instead of taking some truckloads of things up to the junkyard, he would just dump them off at the house. It was quite a sight at times, and you know, with seven kids and having a busy family, it was a sight with all kinds of objects strewn about. Occasionally, we'd clean things up, and then slowly but surely, it would get back to quite a mess. And it was an old shingled, ramshackled house before we got it sided and made it a little bit more presentable, but it was the illustration I did of that scene is pretty true.
Let me ask you to describe one of the illustrations in your book that is among my favorite. And this is the illustration of one of your siblings walking into Andy Warhol's bedroom.
Yes, that's my little sister Maddie, and we kind of put her up to it. Usually, my uncle. He would go out late at night. He'd come back very late, and he'd sleep in during the morning till around 10. And when the door would crack open, it was time that he could have visitors. And we'd be waiting on the steps anxiously, wondering who he had seen that was famous. And he'd love telling us. And I think during that specific time, we told our little sister Maddie that that Andy was ready. Our uncle was ready to have guests, and she went in ahead of us. And of course, he didn't have his wig on yet, and it was there was a bit of a shriek, and he grabbed, I think, a handkerchief to throw on his head for that moment. But it was quite funny, and I was able to work it into the story. I don't think any of my other siblings have seen him without his wig. I think it was my sister Maddie was the lucky one there.
It's a great picture. So there's a picture of your sister shrieking because she realizes she's shocked Andy. And Andy has his hands over his head, and he's kind of screaming because he's so surprised and embarrassed. His wig is flying through the air. He's jumping in surprise so that there's magazines falling off the bed, his tape recorder, his little cassette recorder is falling off the bed. The cats are falling off the bed. There's cats all over this picture. There's a couple of cats falling off the bed. There's cats underneath the bed. There's cats in the canopy over the bed. There's cats under the night table. There's cats on the rug.
Yeah, the cats actually, he had a lot of Siamese cats going in through the house. I think they were friendly to him and my grandmother, but they were very mysterious animals. They hid a lot. So we didn't get to see him very much, but they were always around.
You say he had wigs for every occasion, and then when he was done with wigs, he'd give them to your family. And then there's another picture of everyone in your family wearing an Andy Warhol wig. It's a great picture.
Yeah, of course my father was bald, and he thought my dad would, you know, be able to use his old wigs. And of course we brought boxes of wigs back to Pittsburgh. But little did my uncle know that we kind of masqueraded through the house with these wigs. And my dad, of course, he didn't use them that much except to entertain people when we'd have guests. So it was, I don't think my uncle would have appreciated that.
There's a great picture of you sleeping at your Uncle Andy's townhouse. And you're in a room sleeping, you know, on this cot. And you're surrounded by cartons, rows and rows of cartons piled up to the ceiling of Campbell's soup cans. And tell us about this illustration.
On the top floor, he had this room where he had nothing but soup boxes. And they were stacked like skyscrapers. And I remember on one of those visits, he bring us to the rooms and at night, and we wouldn't know quite what was in it, but in the morning we'd wake up and there would be these huge columns of these soup boxes. And of course, they weren't just cardboard boxes. They were made out of wood and silk screened very carefully. And it was quite a sight. I mean, we always questioned, like, what it was, but we knew it was important. He always told us not to touch them. And it was certainly a sight, and then especially when you'd have to sleep amongst them.
Your family used to own one of Warhol's soup cans. How did you end up owning it, and how come you no longer own it?
Well, early on, in late 61, my dad was in New York, and I think it was just at the very beginning when my uncle was coming up with the idea of the soup can, and he gave my dad a small 16 by 20 can that was hand-painted, and my father brought it home, and we were just, we cherished it for many years, of course. It was important to us. He didn't give us too many things, a few things, a few small things, but that was one of our prized possessions. And we jointly owned it for all these years, and it just got to be kind of impractical to kind of keep it. And I think last year, we all decided that it was probably the best time to try to sell it, and we did sell it and sold it Christie's for a little over $1 million, which was quite an amazing amount to all of us, considering we took it to school endlessly on the bus in a brown paper bag, showed it to our teachers, our classmates. Each of us had a turn with it, and it was always in the family. It was tough to see it go, but it was the only way of sharing it. And at this point in time, when most of us, most of my siblings are in their 40s and 50s and 60s.
You said it became impractical to keep it.
Yeah, I think occasionally one of us would have it for a few years, and then it would get passed on to another family member. I mean, we kind of shared it. So I think it was hard to keep as a family heirloom.
What kind of reactions from people do you get when they see that your name was Warhola? Do they guess that you're a relative of Andy Warhol's? And then, if so, what kind of questions do you get asked?
Well, I guess it's only since he passed away that most people make the connection. But most people never made the connection that his name was Warhola. So when, you know, nowadays, most people do make the connection. And I guess sometimes they think that maybe we inherited a lot of paintings and maybe we're very wealthy. But I sometimes have to tell them that it's not quite that way. Most of his paintings were left to a giant foundation, and it's a foundation for the arts. And it's quite an important foundation, and it does a lot of good for institutions and artists. So I usually tell them that, and then quite often they want to know if I ever met him and, you know, how I knew him and if I met any famous people. And occasionally I say, yeah, I occasionally did, and it was quite a lot of fun.
Did your family feel cheated at all that he didn't leave more to the family?
Well, I think there's always been a little question there. I mean, it would have been his will was, of course, very concise and very brief. I don't think he ever expected to die as suddenly as he did. He died from a bad gallbladder back in '87. So, even though he had premonitions that if he went into a hospital that he wouldn't come out, he just wasn't prepared for it. So I think he may have, if he had lived longer, he may have thought it through and been a little more considerate, I think, to the family.
Are you preparing another book?
I have a few ideas. I might. It's either going to be a book about race cars or a runaway pig. I'm not quite sure what it's going to be. Ultimately, I would love to do another book about my growing up. I think that my grandmother, I couldn't show her fully in this book because it was limited to 32 pages, and actually she would have just taken over because she was such a character. She was a very magical character in our family, and I think that if I was to do another book, I'd probably want to highlight her more.
Well, James Warhola, thank you so much for talking with us.
You're welcome.
James Warhola wrote and illustrated the book Uncle Andy's, A Fabulous Visit with Andy Warhol.